every black parent knows to have that talk with their son or daughter about how to interact with the police. And I couldn't remember if I had given you the talk, because it always seemed to be implicit in when I was growing up. Nobody had to tell us directly. I don't remember having the talk with my father, but it was just in the air.
I think it would, like you, I think it was implicit. The knowledge was passed down.
Yeah.
Not one person ever sat me down and said, okay, this is what you do.
Right.
But somehow it was passed down, and it was very clear.
Okay.
About what we're supposed to do. It was like, okay, you just keep your mouth shut, answer the question simply, keep your hands on the wheel. No sudden movements. Everybody knows that stuff. Don't talk back, just yes sir, yes ma'am, whatever. So no, everyone understood that. And so much so that even when my brother Michael and I are on some car trips, we still joke about it. There's a cop car passes, we're like, glad they didn't pull us over. Glad they didn't shoot us.
So here's the thing that seems to, what's changed. Black people always knew this. This was nothing new. Mm-hmm. We knew that cops messed with us.
Oh, yeah.
But my contention is it's technology has made the difference. You know?
To an extent, I think, because, well, the white folks are just now realizing that we haven't been making shit up all these years.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a plus, but it hasn't necessarily helped overall in terms of the treatment or the change in behavior from the police.
Okay. Now, I'm going to put some historic context mm-hmm. in this. Because I remember during the Civil Rights Movement, especially in Birmingham, when they had set the dogs loose, and Bull Connor, Sheriff Bull Connor, they water hosed people.
Right.
But it was on, for the first time, it was on national television.
Yes.
And so suddenly white people saw how black people were being abused. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what is this? They didn't know. And so I'm just saying, you know, that the memory goes in the background.
Yeah.
And then... but it hasn't gone away, and now it's cropped up again. It hasn't cropped up again. The awareness of it has cropped up.
It's bubbled up to the surface.
Well, yeah,
because it hasn't gone away.
It hasn't gone away, but I'm just saying the awareness among white people.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they're seeing these videos. Because everybody now has a cell phone.
Right.
And, you know, when you can live stream while the event is taking place, and it's sort of hard not to... for some people to say, well, you know, something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much impact it has.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not the only slight change is, they haven't been lying all these years. They haven't been overly sensitive. That's the thing that's slightly changed. But like I said, it hasn't changed the behavior from the police to us.
Yeah. I'm a very positive person. So I'm always looking at the bright side.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes it's like the Dallas police, they got a black police chief. They have been doing, they went through a period when they were really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have made a lot of the changes that we've been talking about. This is what I've been reading. You know, I'm a news junkie. So. But that they had made, like, cop shootings were down significantly. These guys were out there not in their military SWAT stuff. They were just wearing their uniforms, and they were leading the march.
And what I found interesting this past week was the amount of coverage that police officers who got shot. Well, one, I hope they don't get shot, but that's part of their job. They take that risk. It is not the job of a citizen to be concerned about getting shot by a cop.
Yeah, that's true.
A criminal, yes. Once you're a criminal, then you run the risk of that. But an unarmed person who is complying with an officer should not be afraid about getting shot.
That's true.
And we have been taught that since I've been a kid. An episode of Sanford and Son, 1972. There is a joke, Lamont said heart disease is the leading cause of death amongst black people. Fred said, that's funny, I thought it was the police. That was 1972. It has not changed.
I would just like to know that in two or three generations, we won't be having this discussion. Unfortunately, I think we will.
We will.
You know, in my job as a reporter, I travel all around the world. and I got to see other cultures. And I lived in Nigeria for a year, and I got to travel. So I've traveled all over. And then when you became of age, I mean, was it first or second year in college you went to Africa? But since then, you've traveled to other countries. You've done a lot of trips to South America. I know you've been to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my question. When you travel to those other countries and you see different cultures other than what's going on in America, as an American, what do you bring back?
I try to bring back some understanding or appreciation of that culture and the place I've been to. I think I got that from you.
Well,
because every time you came back from a place, you always had something from there. You brought me back something from there. I was like, wow, that's great. This is a whole nother culture I know nothing about, didn't even know existed until you told me. And so I think I've always carried that fascination with me to say there are cultures that have existed for thousands of years I knew nothing about.
Right.
Didn't even know existed.
Well, they didn't teach geography.
No. No. And they certainly didn't teach about world cultures.
Right. So when you, now, my really, my serious overtures trip was the first time I went to Africa. And that was a revelation, both from a very positive and a very negative standpoint. Because you just wonder about culture. And when you don't, as Americans, we really don't necessarily understand other people's cultures.
Yeah, we're not taught to.
And when you go there, at least from my perspective, I tried not to act like an ugly American.
Right.
So I guess I did pass on something implicitly. But tell me about your first trip and what that was like. When you went to Africa, was it Senegal or Ghana?
I went to Cote d'Ivoire.
Oh, Cote d'Ivoire. Okay.
That was my second overseas trip.
What was the first?
The first one, I went to London with Mom. She was
right.
And then she got some time off.
Right, right.
So that was my first trip.
Oh, okay.
Which was great.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay, so what was? Tell me about London.
I think back then, you know, the English history of everything was still at the forefront. Yeah, that's what we were taught.
Yeah.
And everything came out of England, whatever. So,
yeah.
Of course, that's where I wanted to go first.
Okay.
So I had the opportunity to go, and I loved it. I loved there were all these, there is, again, this culture there that existed, and all these little things, all these underlying.
So how old were you when you went to London?
15.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you were...
Maybe.
Yeah.
14, 15, something like that. I was in high school.
Yeah, okay.
And I just loved learning about all these little things I didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And I still get giddy about even on tour in a little van going to some little town I've never heard of. I'm like, wow, what is this place? What's here? What do the people do? What are they like?
Yeah.
Because every little place is different.
There's this, I don't know if it's sort of, it's been ingrained sort of in our family, there's this need to explore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your Aunt Suzanne has been literally everywhere.
Right. She goes someplace every year.
She goes someplace every year. My oldest sister, and she's 84, and she's about to go on another cruise.
All right.
Yeah.
You know,
she's planning on another cruise. She's going through the Panama Canal for the second time.
Wow.
You know, the only place I know that she hasn't been is that she was supposed to go to Egypt, and it happened during the Arab Spring,
so
she didn't go.
Not quite a good time to go.
No, not a good time to go. But, so there's a wanderlust. So do you have,
I definitely have that.
Okay.
Definitely have that. I hate sitting around too long, same place.
Okay.
I mean, I definitely like to have a home I come back to.
Yeah.
But I got to get out and travel.
But when you go on these trips, do you interact with
the people?
Yeah, well, absolutely. The locals, as opposed to, okay, here I am at the tourist hotel, right, and I'm going to go to a winter place, all the tourist locations.
No, never hit the tourist spots. We always go where the people are, where the locals go.
Yeah.
And we find out, we actually, if we're at a hotel, you know, we make friends with the workers. Those are the first people we talk to. Because we're like, hey, and then they realize we're not treating them like shit like the other gringos are. We're like, hey, where, you know, where's the stuff happening? And they tell us, and we go. We go there a couple of times. We saw some of the workers at the hotel. We started partying. We're like, yeah. We're like, thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, that's the thing that I never. On my first trip to Africa, we stopped in London first. And I was shooting a documentary, and I get to London, and we're staying in a really fancy hotel, no big deal, but I look down the street, and there's a McDonald's, and my cameraman is like, oh man, God, there's a McDonald's. I said, wait a minute, we're in England, you're going to go to McDonald's?
Yeah.
I'm like, and what I did was I jumped on a bus, and I didn't know where it was going, and I took the bus to the end of the line, I got out, I had the address of the hotel, in case I, and I just walked around some neighborhood. It turned out later was sort of a working class neighborhood, but I walked into this pub to, mostly used the bathroom, but I wanted to get a drink. And next thing I know, these guys were, you know, who are you? I mean, they said, somebody came up and was very nice. Hi, how you doing? I'm like, hi, I'm from, you know, they figured out the minute I opened my mouth, I was an American.
Yeah.
And so a couple guys bought me drinks and taught me how to shoot darts.
All right.
So I played, and I'm just sitting there, and I ended up staying until pub closed, which is like 11 o'clock, and I'm way the hell on the other side. It turns out one of the guys in there was a cab driver, and he said, hey mate, let me take it, and he took me back to the hotel,
right,
didn't charge me. I'm like, I had a great time. You know, so I don't understand this going someplace and seeing only the what's from America.
Right. Well, that's what we're taught as Americans. That everything has to be American and anything else is just weird. And
did you have any of those, oh my God, I'm here and what the hell am I seeing that's from America that I didn't come all the way over here? Did you have any of that?
Oh, anytime I see a fast food restaurant, like a McDonald's or Wendy's, I'm like, really?
Okay, well, where's the oddest place you saw?
Maybe fast food in Jamaica. I think there's a Wendy's or something like that down there. Something was just weird.
But an American company, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was a definite American company.
Wasn't the, what's the Wimpy's? The English burger chain.
No, haven't seen that.
Wasn't a Wimpy's, okay.
No, it was definitely an American chain.
Oh, okay. Well, my worst experience was when I got to Kenya the first time, and I'm heading for the hotel, and the airport is up on a bluff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to go down the hill. I'm going down the hill in a cab, and I'm looking, and I'm seeing all this sort of big vista, and you can see Nairobi in the background. But, you know, it seems like part of the landscape, not this big city.
Uh-huh.
And there's no greenery, and there's no nothing going on. So as we crest the hill, I'm looking down, and the bottom of the hill is a KFC. I just flew 10,000 miles to see a Kentucky Colonel's fried chicken.
KFC. I tell you, the first time I was in, we were in Cote d'Ivoire, and we were on the tour bus. It was in college. It was just maybe like 12 students who went on the trip. We're going down the highway.
No problem.
Coming from the airport, and I saw this sign that said barbecue. I was like, oh, hell yeah. I'm going to give me some African barbecue. I made a note to remember where that was. We got to the hotel. They said, hey, does anybody have a place they want to go? I was like, barbecue. And everyone was like, okay. I was like, yeah, we need to go to some barbecue. I'm going to get down. So they put everyone in the van. They found the address. walked into the place, I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be good. It was turned out to be a Chinese restaurant. I was like, what, really? First night in Africa, I'm eating Chinese food.
Well, but you know you can't get away from Chinese food anywhere.
Apparently.
There is not apparently. There is no, and you know I've traveled pretty much everywhere, including China. And I have never been any place where there wasn't a Chinese restaurant. Outside of China, the best Chinese restaurant I've ever eaten in is in Kano, Nigeria.
Wow.
Northern Nigeria. A place called the Golden Palace. Food was fantastic. I never had any Chinese food like that because, you know, we get American
Chinese food.
And this was actually, now that I look back on it, sort of Africanized. Certain vegetables that you couldn't get, that you can get in China that you couldn't get here. But the food was fantastic.
So you want to talk about language?
Yeah, okay. I was making a joke, but I said I've lost my black scent. Meaning my accent is...
Oh, God. Black accent.
Yeah. And what's funny, you know, I grew up in a all-black neighborhood. I went to an all-black kindergarten, elementary school, junior high school. I wasn't around white people until I was in high school. So, you know, all my teachers were black. I mean, very well educated, and we were, you know, I had a good education. But, you know, you still pick up the accent from the street. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I sounded black. But at some point, I couldn't...
Thank you.
I was doing something and somebody didn't understand me. And I'm like, what's the matter with this dude? And then I realized it's because of my accent. He was white and he just didn't... I said, something's wrong here.
Was it accent or a phrase?
No, it was an accent because he asked me what my name was. And I said, my name is Steve. And somehow he interpreted that as Dave. And I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, I know, but I guess it's because I had a slow Midwestern drawl and Steve. And then he just heard the end of the day. I mean, that's how he translated. I was like, no, this is not right.
That's funny. I've never known you with the Midwestern drawl. Yes, you got rid of that before me.
Yes, I did. No, I did get to, because by that time I had been working. I started working in broadcasting, and I was worked as a comedian. But I deliberately made an effort to change my tongue because I was like, I'm going to be on broadcasting, and so I'm going to get the Midwestern, nondescript, voice.
No regionalisms in broadcasting.
Yes, and so you know, but by the time I really perfected it, and it just became second nature. It's like learning a second language and leaving, you know, and then you forgetting the first language because you don't use it very often.
Right.
Because I end up working most of the time in mainstream media. Mm-hmm. You know, I was that first group of black reporters who never worked for black newspapers.
Wow.
I started off in mainstream media. So I never had a chance to hang around black people professionally, for the most part. And the ones that I did hang around with all had the same voice.
Right.
But recently, I have been listening to a lot of black podcasts, and I listen to the language, and I realize I can't say that stuff anymore. It doesn't come out right.
No.
It comes out like some white person being offensive.
Right. Being
like,
offensive.
No, man, this is bad. I don't know what to say. So mostly I should, but I just find it amazing that I don't have my black scent anymore. But more to the point, you don't either.
I don't think I ever did.
No, I'm saying, but because look how you were raised.
Sure.
You were raised by professionals.
Right.
All of whom had gone to college, all of whom were working in mainstream businesses, and we all adjusted our speech. I think the closest it comes is your stepmother, because she grew up in Brooklyn and of Caribbean heritage, so she can do a Caribbean accent.
Oh yeah, I love when she does that.
No, but that's because she still around those people. And I'm not around a lot of black people other than the family and, you know, in the neighborhood. But it's just, these are all professionals. These are all people who don't necessarily have a black scent.
That's interesting. Not a lot of folks would even admit that. Not around a lot of black people. But yet you're distinctly black.
Yes.
And you've I have not
lost my culture.
No.
I lost my accent.
Mm-hmm. No. And there is a distinction there, because I think some people would probably consider that losing the culture, but that's not the case. It's just an accent.
No, if it comes down to it, I cut a nigga.
See, now that's one of those things. That did not come out right.
That's what I'm saying. The sentiment's there.
The sentiment's there, right.
The cultural impetus is there, but it didn't come out.
The language,
right.
No.
So I find that hysterical, not being able to use my native tongue. One of Allie's friends, who's known her, of course, all her life, and is a friend of Hilda's, that's my mother-in-law, and didn't know, had never met me, had only talked to me on the phone. But we went out to visit her, and she pulled Allie aside and said, "I didn't know your husband was black. I kept wondering why you married that white man." I can't win.
And I get that sometimes. People ask, "What are you?" I'm like, "I'm a black man." For me, that's normal. I've always been raised black. I've been taught black. I've never once ever felt like I had to try to assimilate. I've never once been encouraged to assimilate.
No.
I've been taught black.
Yeah.
So when people say that to me, like, "What are you?" I'm like, what do you mean?
Well, but you know, look, in our families, on both sides of our families, there is a huge range of color.
Yes.
Okay?
Oh, yes.
So, you know, you didn't know, but your great-great-grandmother, her brother, blonde hair, blue eyes.
Mm.
Very fair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his sister, my grandmother, your great-grandmother, looks Native American.
Mm.
And same family.
Yeah.
And then you can go the color range in the family from very, very dark to good pass for white.
Right.
Okay? And so there's... But none of these people thought of themselves as anything but black.
As what?
As black.
Mm.
And resent if somebody sees them as otherwise.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that was... I think a coping, you know, survival mechanism.
At that time.
Not saying it was right or I agree with it.
Well, but it didn't happen as much as people thought about people passing for white.
Mm-hmm.
But it also seems that now we're back into this white privilege and people not understanding that if you want the advantages, you should be white, and therefore you're an other, and like, and if you don't sort of fit the norm, you know, what are you?
Right.
And you're just like, what difference does it make? You know, that's what I want to say. It's like, are the service I'm providing you substandard?
Right.
Oh, no, you're really good at what you do. Well, you know, that's all we need to be talking about. But I'm getting old enough that at some point I don't care.
Yeah.
And I just want to, when people get in my face, I just come right back and say, "No, you don't understand. You got white privilege."
Right.
No, I don't. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I'm like, no, dude. No.
You think you are.
You had to see a cop shoot a running man in the back several times before you thought, you know, cops aren't always decent, kind human beings. You know, unless the video existed,
it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And the cops actually said, "No, he was trying to take my gun."
Right.
That's why I shot him.